Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
On Friday, October 16th, the Norris Group proudly presented its 8th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds from the event benefited Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners. First Lending Solutions, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women, MVT Productions, Property Radar, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, and White House Catering.
Within the next 24 months, do you see any ability for the mortgage world to become more aggressive with loan products and policies within the next 24 months? That undue stimulus that we're looking for, or not looking for, but in other words, is that going to be a factor that isn't present now, in your opinion?
So I answer it this way, in all seriousness. If you believe MBA statistics, which I do, the greatest portion of home buyers will be Hispanic or African American. The white guys sitting here like Doug and I and you, we're going to be at the low end of it. They need loan programs developed so they can purchase the house.
Okay.
They don't exist today for some of the people that are buying. So here's the answer to your question. The market is set to explode from a single family purchase perspective over the next, and I'm going to go out farther than you, 6 to 8 years, it should explode.
In between then or starting then?
Starting then.
Starting then. Yeah, okay, so, 5 years from now. Okay.
Incomes are down. Interest rates have to be released and go up. I'm not an economist. Doug can correct me if I'm wrong. It has a negative effect initially when rates go up. You get an initial bump. When rates start to go up, everybody gets off the fence. They run out and buy. Look at what we see today, the statistics that came out this week. We are still in a decreased type of economy in Philadelphia Fed and Chicago Fed. It's below where it should be. Job creation is still low. Here's how I'm going to answer your question. We'll have a lousy market for the next 18 months.
Okay.
Okay. And then we have an election, depending on however it goes, and I'm not calling it either way, then you're going to see some change.
Okay.
And the market will come back, but it's poised to take off, and we're going to have a very hot market for anywhere between now and the next 8 years. From a single family purchase perspective, that's my prediction.
Okay.
I was just going to comment on your credit conditions, part of your question. We survey lenders on a quarterly basis, and we do that in part to understand whether lenders have different views than consumers, and also because the only other data out there on that is the Fed survey, which is heavily weighted toward large banks. And in the most recent quarter, there was a statistically significant easing of credit conditions among particularly large and mid-sized institutions. To Dave's point, though, in the FHA space, there's been a big shift away from that market by the big lenders. We've actually seen that in our data at Fannie as well. The share of the business from the large lenders has fallen from about two-thirds to about one-third over the last 3 years or so. So it's actually the larger the smaller institutions, which are better at finding those people that Dave's talking about and delivering the opportunity. So we're optimistic about it as well.
Can I give you 10 seconds on
that? Yeah, sure.
Way down in the weeds on this. You have the big banks pulling out of the FHA market because they're worried about repurchase, okay? I'm an underwriter. I used to be an underwriter for FHA loans. You used to be able to make a business decision on an FHA loan. If somebody had a one-time life event, they didn't make their payments because their wife had cancer. Document it, make the loan, sign it, close it. They had 30 credit cards that they charged up, you didn't make the loan. You can still make that decision today, but you won't make that decision today because you're afraid of repurchase. There are people out there today, regardless of their ethnicity, that are 550 credit scores that deserve to be homebuyers. They're afraid to make those loans because of the repurchase. I'm talking about FHA.
Okay.
You can't make a business decision anymore on a loan based on performance because of the repurchase threat. It's still there. I talk to my friends in the business who still own companies. They've risked everything they have. They're not the big banks. They're lenders. Everything they have is tied up in their company, and they're afraid to make that loan that should be made.
Right. And so they don't.
So they don't make it.
Okay. And that has ramifications because that person, if they had gotten to own a home 2 years ago, would have 30-40% equity and have a running start of being an entrepreneur or whatever. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. One of the things, and then we'll wrap up with this, is that when you invited us to Washington, D.C., I got in front of one of the HUD gentlemen, and I said, you used to be able to do simple assumptions. You know, I didn't have to qualify. I was just sending $35 my name. He said, I don't have any problem with that. And I said, can you put that in writing for me? He says, no, I can't do that. Thank you, gentlemen, Thank you very much. Oh, I thought I was going to go to a podium. Next up, we'll have three panelists, and they can all come up together after I read the bios. Leslie Appleton Young. Leslie is Vice President and Chief Economist for the California Association of Realtors, a statewide trade organization with over 195,000 members dedicated to the advancement of professionalism in real estate. It got noisy. She directs the activities of the association's member information group and oversees the analysis of the housing market, brokerage industry trends, member communications, and membership development activities. She is also closely involved in the association's strategic planning efforts and is a well-known speaker in California real estate community. We have Eileen Reynolds. Eileen is a vice president for government affairs at Tejon Ranch Company, a diversified real estate development and ag business. An owner of the largest contiguous piece of private property in California, located between L.A. and Bakersfield, the company is committed to responsibly using its 270,000 acres of land and resources to meet the housing, employment, and lifestyle needs of Californians. Reynolds manages the company's political advocacy efforts in Sacramento and Washington, D.C. Reynolds serves in a variety of leadership positions at CBIA. She is also an active director of the California Business Properties Association and president of the Foundation for Environmental and Economic Progress at the federal level. And last but not least, our friend Sean O'Toole. Prior to launching Property Radar, Sean O'Toole successfully purchased and flipped more than 150 residential and commercial foreclosures, leveraging 15 years in the software industry. Sean used technology as a key competitive advantage to build his successful real estate investment track record. Sean has always thrived in startup environments and as such became a key contributor at Exing Technology, acquired by Real Networks, ISI Global Center, acquired by Global Crossing, and Icarian Inc., acquired by Workstream Inc. We welcome all of our panelists, please, up to our board. I think maybe all over to my left is better. That would be, I can look at all three of you at the same time that way. Okay. Interesting stuff. Sean, I'm going to start with you because it's going to then go to Leslie in a follow-up question.
Uh-oh.
Set me up.
When Ward used to first teach trustee sale buying, it was a very different journey to get to the opening bid, getting updates and all that. You kind of revolutionized all that. You took what you knew in the computer world and you plugged it in to the foreclosure business. So what were the ramifications of that as far as if you were a participant trying to buy at those trustee sales? Let's talk about that first and then go to Property Radar and kind of the same journey with now the extended statistics that you deal with.
You know, it's interesting. I actually think it comes back to the employment participation rate that's been going down since for the last 40 years.
You're responsible for that?
Well, yeah, kind of. You know, I started in the software business when I was 14, and reflecting back on that and the things that I've done in that industry, most of what I've done is make things more efficient.
Right.
Which means you need fewer people.
Right.
And I would say more than anything else, that was the change we made. You needed fewer people to track sales, you know. Just one gentleman I can think of, you know, came up to me and said, you know, geez, I used to have three people full-time tracking the sales in two counties. And now I have them doing other things for me. So it made them a lot more efficient.
The information access also made somebody get up to speed much quicker. They were able to go from 0 to 95 inside a very tight time period, where that was not true before. But also the cost of access changed. It used to be thousands of dollars a year, and you know, and then it turned into what, $50. And so you had a lot more people able to do that now.
I was probably a little too desperate.
Oh, to get people
on the pricing.
Yeah, those of us who are trying to buy at trustee sales would agree with that. How is access to information, and this is for Leslie, how has access to information for the consumer kind of changed the world of realtors? Because I would think most of them are sort of self-shopping until a much later point than they used to.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all on the internet, and if it's on the internet, it's true, right? We all know that. And so I think there's a wealth of information out there. There's not always a lot of wisdom and ability to kind of analyze and figure out what to do, which is why even everyone in this room has access to the same information. I mean, everybody's got Google and this, that, and the other thing, and yet you have wonderful teachers, you know, who make a difference in people's lives because they're just different ways of thinking about things and analyzing things. So, you know, the realtor used to be the key to the information. And I think, you know, you'd be looking for a home in the 80s and there'd be this big giant book with like grainy black and white pictures. And your realtor would go, I'm going to give this to you over the weekend, but don't tell anyone or I'll go to jail, right? And so, you know, what's happened is the whole value of the realtor really isn't about finding the home. It's really about navigating the whole transaction. And I think your prior, the prior panel really talked about how difficult that is today, even with all the efficiencies and programs and technology. You know, to get from point A to point B is a lot.
The makeup of the buyer now, as far as the household that's buying a property, you know, when I was growing up, it was the married couple and the 2.3 kids or something like that. And now that's a very different makeup of who is having to or who's trying to buy a home. And many times they're now one adult worker per household. And so how has that changed, I guess, what they're able to buy and their willingness to either buy or just say, I'm going to have to rent?
Well, I think that's probably a segue into the housing affordability crisis, which we're facing again today. It seems to be kind of on a 10-year cycle. I think the home ownership rate for millennials is about 20%, and many of them had boomer parents that were able to write checks to get them in, so that down payment hurdle is really, really tough. But you also just have a flourishing of I don't even want to call it alternative lifestyles, you know. But, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it was the mom and the dad and the two kids. And now it's people actually choosing to be single because it's less stressful for some people. You know, you have same-sex couples and partners and all, everybody's great, you know. So it's just a very diverse, diverse world. I think the one point I want to make, and Doug made some really great comments about millennials, and you know, millennials really do want to buy homes, but they have, because of the economy and their codependent boomer parents, have really delayed adulthood by about 10 years. So now that we've got household formation coming, you know who you are. I am one. You know who you are. But now that they're starting, now that we are seeing a pickup in household formation, job creation in California is much faster than it is for the nation, and so on and so forth, you're seeing more home ownership actually happening for millennials. And I do agree with David. I think you are going to have kind of a renaissance, you know, once we get through the next couple of years, because they're going to have families. And once you have kids, you have a whole different attitude about home ownership, and you really have to focus on schools.
We're going to revisit affordability in a minute because that's one of my favorite topics. And Sean and I have been batting it around. But Eileen, I want to welcome you to the panel for the first time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We appreciate you being here. And honestly, it seems to be really appropriate. There was on your bio, talk about that big project where you have 270,000
acres. Tejon Ranch. I'm the vice president for government affairs for Tejon Ranch Company. Many of you would know that on the grapevine if you drive I-5, the road that's shut down today. our employees couldn't go to the job today because our headquarters is in Lebec, that Mecca. But I work for a large land developer, agribusiness company. That's my day job, and I'm based in Sacramento. But my volunteer job is I'm the chairperson of the California Building Industry Association this year.
And
so we have some builders here, or somebody who cares about building. Thank you. Thank you.
And to be able to develop that project, there was 240,000 acres of that was sort of put in conservative.
Well, what we did, Bruce, is we entered into negotiations with 5 environmental groups. It started with 6. One group is notorious for litigating every future development there is in anywhere in the nation. It's called the Center for Biological Diversity. We were in 2-year negotiations with these 5 environmental groups, and I mean big ones, Sierra Club, Natural Resources Defense Council, Planning Conservation League, and others. And we were in the confidential negotiations over our property for a good 14 months, and then Center for Biological Diversity saw that there wasn't going to be an agreement and decided they needed to leave the table because that wasn't their style. They'd prefer to roll up their sleeves and sue people. So, what we did was we have 4 development projects. If you've driven over the Grapevine, if you're going south, about to ascend the Tejon Pass, we have the Commerce Center, Tejon Ranch Commerce Center at the base of the Grapevine, where the new outlets at Tejon is located, if any of you have the time to stop. And then we're going to build a master plan community there called Grapevine of about 12,000 units. You go up the mountain into Lebec, and we're going to do a second home community called Tejon Mountain Village, which will be about 3,000 units in some of our most beautiful stretches of land. And then further down the freeway in Los Angeles County to the north, about 19,000 units in a master plan community called Centennial. Now, so there is actually something that could happen as far as new development in California, but from the standpoint of the industry I'm representing tonight, one of the toughest things to do in California, as you all know, is to build anything in this state.
Is the role of the environmental sector going to become more of an issue in the next few years? And we have a Governor Brown that seems to be pretty aggressive in some of his stances, 50% of our electricity coming up is supposed to be renewable. So how does that add, how does that change for the builder, you know, what they're able to do and able to get approved?
Well, I would argue that they've been strong here for as long as most of us have been alive. I mean, when all the environmental laws came into effect in the 70s, California was at the forefront of it, and we continue to be, especially now, as you mentioned. We have a governor and a pro tem of the state Senate that want to make California be the climate change leader of the world. So they want to reduce greenhouse gases, and they want to ratchet down on every sector in our economy, including development. So we saw some bills in the legislature this year that essentially we believe, one, that we were able to stall for the time being, that would have essentially required that if you're going to create a new home, it's got to be zero net energy, meaning it doesn't use any energy. It has to be able to turn back to the grid. We haven't figured out exactly how to do that yet. And one of the things that we ended up having to pay quite a great deal of money to commission a study by some experts who were from both sides of the aisle, both Republican and Democrat, former experts of the Department of Finance and the Legislative Analyst Office, and they brought us a study that said, well, if you want to try to be zero net energy, it's going to be at least $58,000 per unit. And that's in addition to a lot of the other societal problems that are put on the backs of new home buyers, such as, you know, increased taxes. Right now, there's a big movement on housing affordability where we've seen some communities. The courts have said there needs be no nexus between local government's ability to raise money on new development for housing affordability programs. In some areas of the state, they're raising fees up to $30,000 to $60,000 per unit to pay for affordable housing that doesn't need to even be related to the provision of what the new development is doing. So we have a situation in California specifically where, yes, our legislature is against us from the get-go, and at the same time, we've already have layers of regulation upon the industry. And one of the people earlier said to me, well, my gosh, it's as if people want to outlaw any growth in California. And I think there are people that do believe that would really rather not see any growth, because if you don't build it, potentially they won't come. But as many of you know, we've got... You know, in some cases, I've heard, this is not my forte, because I'm working for a land developer, but there are places in existing neighborhoods where, you know, two and three families are living in one house. Well, that's not addressing our housing crisis. We need to build more.
Leslie or Sean, the water issue that's, you know, one of the things, I mean, I'm very suspicious of radical elements on either side of a fence, to be honest with you. But this is sort of like a real drought, and it seems like there's a real chance to say, okay, well, here are the rules, and we're going to fine you a whole bunch of dollars if you don't do stuff. And I start to be concerned about the building industry just being told you can't build anything new because that's going to use water. Sean, are you concerned at all that type of mood could reach into the investor world and say, okay, well, you have a rental that, you know, there's water on the sidewalk and they have a system where you get told on. That's my concern, is the investor might be the target, sort of like the tall grass thing that we got some vines on. So just any input on...
Why not?
Why not?
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate. Adrenaline Athletics, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Elite Auctions, iMortgage, In a Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Kukan and Clark, Las Brisas Escrow, L.A. South RIA, Lavis Tax Wealth Management, National RIA, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Orange County Phoebe, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Resonant Lens Photography, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sacramento Real Estate Club, Capital City Wealth Builders, Southern California Chapter of the Appraisal Institute, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, Tri-Counties Association of Realtors,
You direct IRA Services, Weston South Coast Plaza, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc. See isurvivedrealestate.com for event video and sponsor information.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.